Well, Kent, we're back together on our own podcast, Global E-commerce Tech Talks, and it's just you and me. Jim and Scott are busy wrangling and corralling up the guests and folks to come join us on the 25th, March 25th, coming up real soon. And, you know, it's interesting days, and of course, e-commerce, we don't have to talk about how much that's accelerated from an adoption perspective in North America and elsewhere in the world. What is interesting, and I wanted to get you start off getting your perspective on, is, you know, we're in an unusual time where there's no tourists, and really no international tourists in either of our countries, either the US or Canada, and which means either you're setting up shop in China or LATAM or Europe, or you're engaging in global e-commerce. Are you feeling that momentum when you talk to retailers and the people that power that connectivity? Are you feeling that growth that I suspect is happening?
Yeah, I think that the short answer is yes. I mean, certainly there's, you know, the boom in e-commerce, but there was definitely an echo boom in cross-border. However, you know, one of the things that we're talking about at our spring summit on March 25th, we're calling it Guelph Accelerate. Again, it's a virtual event, unlike the live events that we've been doing, is the idea that plenty of people did have to put their international, I would say their ambitious international e-commerce expansion plans on hold a little bit. And, you know, there were a couple of reasons for that. One was simply they just didn't have the product that they needed to be able to you know, feed all the mouths out there. So, you know, I know we've got Greg from Fender that's going to be speaking about how their dealers, which are, you know, hugely important to them, you know, some of the challenges around, you know, how can Fender sell stuff direct to consumer and not be able to, you know, provide the same products to their dealers, so they
when you say Fender, you're talking, what I think you're talking, right, is guitars, right? Musical
exactly
guitars,
yeah. Yeah. So you know, obviously booming business. I mean, you know, there's dogs and guitars, you know, that might be the, you know, the takeaway from the pandemic, but yeah, you know, something, you know, but before I get back to that, you know, something mentioned, you know, that the timing was great. Actually, the timing of when we started focusing on cross border, you know, we actually kind of missed it. We were too early. We thought back in 2008, or so that, you know, it was time, you know, people were just starting to get their stores and their e-commerce teams to play well together. And we were like, well, you know, what about global? The whole world wide web is all about, you know, extending the reach internationally. And so right after we did our first international study, boom, along came the I guess what we call the Great Recession, you know, knocked the wind out of not just retail, but e-commerce as well. And, you know, by the time we started recovering and we hoped people would start refocusing on, or focusing to begin with, I should say, on international growth, along came the, you know, the iPhones, and all the money and focus and strategy went into mobile commerce. You know, the silver lining there was that, you know, they started to see all this traffic coming in from around the world through mobile devices. So by the time we actually finally started the Global E-commerce Leaders Forum, you're right, our timing was better then. But yeah, we've been looking at this international stuff for 12, 13 years now. And, you know, it was interesting too, because, you know, with the whole kind of Trump and the, you know, America First stuff, that wasn't exactly promoting open borders. And, you know, so we felt that there was some friction, you know, from the trade wars and things like that. Although to be honest, you know, watch what the consumer does. And the overpowering trend was the fact that you've got a lot of young people on social media, and, you know, stuff shows up on their phone and there's a buy button, and they push the buy button because, you know, influencers recommended it. And you could argue this went all the way back to the bulletin boards and things like that. But the bottom line is just, you know, cool products are found out a lot quicker, and the people that are buying them aren't thinking about, you know, the fact that it might have to ship halfway across the world. They don't think about the borders and the barriers and things like that. And that's a lot of what we've been working with the Guelph community to kind of understand and overcome over the last, you know, dozen years now.
I guess that's that piece, that ecosystem that makes it all happen, right? That how do I get a product from point A to point B? And if the point A is America and the point B is China, or the point B is Brazil, it sounds simple, as you said, the World Wide Web, but it's vastly complicated, right? And it's getting, do you feel it's getting more complicated with the platforms? I know I was talking, you and I have spoken with, and I know a big supporter is Flo, who helps, you know, there's more of these people come along that understand the complexities of moving product around the world. Are you finding it getting easier for brands or harder, or just are they lost in complexity?
Yeah, I mean, there's you know, 15 questions pop up when I think of how to respond to that. I mean, it is getting easier for brands, but then the question is, okay, what do we mean by brands? I mean, when we started Gelf, it was mostly retailers. So I would say, you know, let's say retailers are the people that sell the branded products. And it's gotten harder on the retailers, to be honest, international, I should say, in many cases, because the brands are what are globally known. So you look at what's on Tmall, you know, it's not the Macy's of the world. It's the people, you know, the brands that are sold at Macy's. So yes, it's getting easier for brands. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's easy, because in many cases, these brands have been used to selling through wholesale partners. And I mean, we just did a study a couple years ago that we're kind of firing back up again this summer that looks at how digital is disrupting traditional wholesale international distribution. So, you know, the takeaway from that was, as brands, you know, big brands started working more with marketplaces like, well, predominantly Amazon, but, you know, also Alibaba, they started to see these digital, you know, platforms as really more of a global distribution platform than just a marketplace. And that's a, you know, to your point about ecosystems, we're actually arguing that we've already moved from multi-channel to multi-platform, and the next leap is into ecosystem selling. And you look at all the acquisitions that Amazon has, and all the different tools that, you know, somebody like a Tencent or an Alibaba can bring to the table. Those are massive ecosystems. And, you know, live streaming is part of that, omni-channel. So yeah, this question of, is it easier? There's definitely much more complexity. But I think from a traditional, you know, kind of channel disintermediation or channel friction perspective, it's easier for a brand to go direct these days than ever before, at least strategically, because either their traditional wholesale distributors are, you know, their heads are in the sand and they're not they're not digitally savvy. They don't look like a digital marketing agency, which is what I would say most international distributors need to look like this day. Or their, you know, big wholesale retail partners, you know, some of them are probably going out of business. So, you know, in some ways, the whole acceleration of the digital disruption brought on by the pandemic has made it easier. But at the same time, a lot of the big brands and even the digital native startup brands, you know, they don't necessarily always have the team and the focus. Well, I should say the big traditional brands are just building their digital teams. The digital natives have been typically, you know, kind of digitally led or global first. So, you know, that's why you're getting so much traction.
It's interesting because I remember you and I chatting about how the evolution of e-commerce, you know, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, even e-commerce teams were small and you know, poorly funded sometimes, particularly in brands, because the brands were still trying to get their heads around channel conflict and direct to consumer. And then they found out, thanks to the pandemic, that these DTC teams were up and keeping the company afloat. And they're like, you know, we should probably add Bob and Sue. We should probably take them out of the back room and give them some resources. Are you finding that kind of graduation, so to speak, where you've now got an established e-commerce team, but now you need an established and start growing, take those people out and have a professional growth with resources behind it, e-commerce cross-border team? Is that what you're discovering?
Yeah, I mean, we often, you know, when we kind of introduce what we do, we talk about the early days of e-commerce when there was one person on the retail team looking at e-commerce, and today there's one person on the e-commerce team that's looking at international.
Right.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, you mentioned the you know, the guys at Flow, and, you know, want to give them a shout out because they are one of our sponsors for our upcoming event. But, you know, they are a great example of how, you know, kind of this next generation of cross-border platforms has emerged and developed. And, you know, I really don't think many e-commerce teams can do what they need to do from a cross-border or global expansion perspective without these platforms. So, yeah, definitely the tools are there, and these platforms are growing, and, you know, you're seeing more of the kind of headless approach coming in, where it's, you know, not just one monolithic, you know, potentially overpriced, hard to integrate type, you know, sub-commerce platform that's focused on cross-border, like we saw, you know, some of the first generation platforms out there. So yeah, it's definitely, there are definitely more tools. In fact, we're seeing some of the shipping and logistics companies really get it together as far as being, you know, operations, you know, getting your operational house in order is job number one when it comes to serving international clients. I mean, you've got to be able to screen for fraud and provide payment and, you know, do the harmonization and understand the tariffs and give them a trusty landed cost. And then you got to ship it internationally. And ideally you help them track that product from carrier to delivery agent to final mile. So yeah, there's a lot of integration and things like that. And we're definitely seeing the logistics guys, you know, maybe be a little bit late to the game, but you know, there's a big part of that. This whole kind of post-order customer experience is probably something we talk more about at Guelph than just about anything. You know, that being said, you know, I started in this space really kind of covering a lot of the online advertising and the digital marketing folks. So we're always hoping that there'll be more and more focus on international marketing and, you know, ways to connect with the next generation of, you know, kind of shopper out there that may be coming from an emerging market as the, you know, the global middle class, you know, quite literally comes online. But, you know, there's a lot of work ahead. There's a lot of localization, a lot of marketing and things like that. But I think that's one reason that we see a lot of social, because social covers a lot there. It you know, I would argue that social has always been what has fueled the word of mouth and the viral nature of e-commerce. It was, you know, it wasn't until social media arrived that we really saw this lift in international. And I think social, you know, especially, you know, folks like Facebook that joined us last fall as they launched their discovery commerce, this idea of, you know, as stores are less and less reliable source of product discovery, it's going to happen online. And what we're seeing is it's happening on social.
And let's take a quick step back for those listeners who may not be steeped in this idea of marketplaces, global marketplaces. I mean, you named several of the big powerhouses in Asia. I know we've talked to the folks in Mercado Libre in Latin America, and of course Amazon. Many North American consumers would know, or even folks in the retail would know about Amazon, and you know, 70% of their work is marketplace or their sales. And now, you know, Walmart, Best Buy, many are starting marketplaces. But where do they sit in the ecosystem? Like if you wanted to sell into China or you wanted to sell into Latin America, I guess you have a choice, right? You could try to set up your own website and try to market and go there yourself, or you go through these marketplaces. Or is that even a choice anymore? Are both those places marketplace, so marketplace dominant that you've got to figure out how to work with these marketplaces?
Yeah, you asked the question at a good time, because I'm working on a kind of a cross-border guide right now for the Canadian government. Their trade team is doing a great job at providing e-commerce backing and resources for, you know, anywhere from small and medium-sized sellers to bigger companies. But so I mean the framework, if you will, and I'll try to sketch you a picture here. But you know, we've always looked at three predominant models. So the cross-border model, which is, you know, essentially taking advantage of your domestic operation. So you see all this traffic coming in from countries around the world, and you basically figure out how to accept the order and, you know, screen for fraud, make sure that people can pay, and then you ship product basically from your own, you know, US-based distribution centers. So that's kind of the cross-border model in a very simplistic manner. You know, the bigger brands may be, you know, at the another model of which we call the regional build model, which is essentially where big brands have maybe built localized sites. And, you know, there's some innovators out there that are making it easier for people to build, you know, local sites internationally. Shopify has actually done a really good job of helping company build, you know, a Spanish site, a German site, or something like that. What they need to work on, and they're working on it now, is you know, providing more of the cross-border, you know, functionality. But the marketplace piece is probably the most dynamic part. So what we often see is that people will, you know, realize that they need to start serving these international shoppers. So they'll adopt the cross-border model, in large part because, you know, everything's in place. You know, they work with a UPS or a FedEx, or if they're, you know, more advanced, maybe, you know, different, you know, shipping lane carriers and things like that, that maybe you haven't heard about, to get the product there quicker and cheaper and things like that. But the international marketplace is often, you know, maybe where they graduate to, or more accurately, they broaden their focus to the marketplaces. In many cases, the traffic that they get to their U.S. site, if you will, the cross-border traffic, is really organic traffic. Again, you know, we'll say driven largely by maybe social or word of mouth and things like that. But when it's time to really get serious, you know, a lot of times they'll embrace these marketplaces. Now, in China, they don't really have much of a choice. Yes, people will keep their, you know, e-commerce or their China sites or brand sites live. You know, a lot of times people are like, yeah, we want to make sure we keep the lights on just in case, you know, you never know what's going to happen in China. But for the most part, China is dominated by the marketplace model. And in many cases, we see that in Latin America as well. Mercado Libre has just been killing it. You know, we do have a session at Gulf Accelerate, you know, next Thursday, the 25th, that's going to look at LATAM. We've got one of the e-marketer guys, Mateo, joining us. So we'll be diving into that. But
I love talking about LATAM because, you know, it's the funniest place closest to us that is just a massive, massive opportunity. And it's not as thought of. I mean, you and I had a great discussion on the Global E-commerce Tech Talks panel with some folks from Latin America, and it just really opened my eyes to the scale and scope of the opportunity that is right on our doorstep, in a matter of fact. And it's, as you're saying, it feels like it's structured more like you know, marketplace, which is probably makes it easier to go after, right?
Yeah, I mean, the marketplace model is easier. Now, you know, that being said, there's a, you know, the marketplace is going to take a cut, yeah, and they're going to own the customer. So that's the real challenge. And, right, you know, it's not for everybody. You know, luxury brands that want to control the experience, you know, have shied away from marketplaces. Mm-hmm. You know, in a second, I'll jump to this whole kind of how we're seeing the cross-border and the marketplace experience start to converge. But before I get there, you know, I'll tackle that last. In many cases, when you're not super comfortable with a country or a region, it's best to work with a partner. So, you know, certainly that's the case of why Tmall and Tmall Global have done so well, and the JD folks are doing well in China. Latin America, same idea. I'm not as confident. So I want that strong partner, and I want a partner who's built this marketplace stack. So all the technologies and so forth and whatnot that, you know, yes, you can get that from your cross-border platform, whether it's a Flow or a Global-e or, you know, some of the other folks out there, eShop World and things like that, that have all been big supporters of ours over the years. However, you're not always going to get it from your commerce platform partner. So, you know, Shopify is, you know, honestly, probably behind a little bit on being able to provide cross-border support. You know, the Demandware folks, Salesforce.com, Commerce Cloud, folks like that have done, you know, a good job. But, you know, they're working with the big guys for the most part. So this marketplace not only kind of provides you the technology and the know-how and the local partner, in many cases, you know, it's a fish where the fish are type thing. And, you know, that's where the customers are going to be. Now, the challenge is, of course, you're going to get, you know, you start selling on a Mercado Libre or a Linio or something like that down in Latin America. Yeah, you're going to get sales and all, but, you know, you're not necessarily going to own the customer. We did an interesting study actually looking at marketplaces in Europe last fall. And that's an area where I think, yeah, what you tend to find is that, you know, the Amazon properties are far and away, you know, where U.S. retailers go first. But, you know, we've got the Zalando people speaking at Gulf Accelerate next Thursday, and they're making a big push to move away from just, you know, kind of supporting large European brands to helping smaller companies. And, you know, I think there'll be an opportunity for U.S. sellers to get more involved with Zalando. We did some work with Frugo, which is another kind of UK-based marketplace. So, yeah, the marketplace space is, you know, really interesting now, especially when you start looking at social commerce. And we tend to think of the social commerce platforms, you know, we put them in the marketplace bucket, if you will. So,
oh, that's interesting.
A lot of stuff going on there for sure.
So you're seeing, and just kind of the last thoughts, you're starting to see these social platforms. I'm starting to see it certainly in terms of influencing sales in stores like never before. People aren't browsing and shopping the way they used to during the pandemic. They're kind of, you know, they're going to a store and they're getting out. So these social platforms become the tip of the spear in terms of being able to influence product purchase. It sounds like you're, you know, the next logical step is for them not to just be a referral but for them to have marketplaces themselves, which sounds like what you think is going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. It's mm-hmm. you know, it's getting rid of the friction, collapsing the, you know, collapsing the distance between discovery and the buy button. And that's exactly it. Now, there's more to it. I mean, you know, if you're interested, if you go to globaleCommerceLeadersForum.com and you can find, you know, some of our content from last fall's Oktoberfest. And again, like Jake Bailey and his team at Facebook, you know, did a great job just kind of explaining what they're doing. And there's more to it than just, you know, hey, social works great, you know, and, yeah, and in many cases right. it is that simple. You use influence, you know, instead of searching and discovering on your own, you just have a trusted influencer too. And, you know, whatever they say, yeah, that probably works. Hit the buy button on the, you know, the Facebook or the Instagram page and, mm. and off you go. But there's more to it too. And I think part of what's going on, and, you know, again, think of the backdrop of what's going on with Apple and Google, you know, the you know, mm. the retirement of third party data or cookies, if you will, and the priority of first party data. You know, part of what's going on with discovery commerce is this idea that there needs to be more machine learning, or, you know, if you want to sprinkle some AI dust on it, you can. But mm. the reality is, you know, you got to get better and smarter with your targeting. And there's a ton of targetable data that has been shared, you know, with the social platforms, you know, kind of a first party scenario.
Oh, so what you're saying is as, you know, cookies become less viable in terms of tracking and understanding the data from social media takes its place. Is that what you think is going to happen? Yeah, I think
that is a way of looking at it. I mean, again, you're going to have to, you know, it's going to have to be opt-in and first party mm-hmm. data and things like that. But, you know, the reality is, you know, for all the scrutiny that Facebook has gotten, you know, it hasn't impacted the usage or the growth or anything like that. People, mm. you know, there's a lot of conversations going on in the Beltway that, you know, are irrelevant to the rest of America. But that's probably a whole podcast series for another day.
The next upcoming event is March 25th, right, for you guys. And then...
Yes. Yeah, Accelerate is, you know, to be honest, it's replacing our West Coast event that we do every year in the first quarter. You know, we've been getting together in mid-February in LA for the last 5 or 6 years. And, you know, we're going to really miss the, you know, the face-to-face stuff this year. You know, we were fortunate to get it in last year before, you know, kind of everything, you know, kind of went to hell in a handbasket, I guess. But, yeah, this year, so we're calling it Accelerate. We've pushed it, you know, from mid-February to Thursday, March 25th. We'll be going, you know, we start at 12:30. I think we're supposed to wrap it up at 4:30, but, you know, the prep
Eastern
calls.
Time, right?
Eastern time. ET? Thank you. Yeah, yes, yeah. I'm in California, so I'll be getting going bright and early in the morning. But yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, we've got some great speakers, and so, you know, probably stretch 4:35, something like that. But, I mean, the big picture is, you know, again, Accelerate. Why do we call it that? Well, you know, we've heard over and over again, okay, the pandemic has accelerated all sorts of trends, and that, you know, certainly none more so true than the growth of e-commerce and the echo boom in cross-border, as we're calling it. We are kind of starting off the day by, you know, starting with a real super strong panel. We've got Elizabeth Krause from Speedo and Tossi Christopher, who's the VP of International at Paula's Choice, and Kelly Swanton, who's the VP of International at Reformation, and Jody Watson, who serves a lot of boards, has, you know, kind of been a real e-commerce leader over the years. She's working with a company called Smart Canister now, and again, is on a lot of boards. So we're really kicking off, and, you know, there's real thing, four things we really want to kind of accomplish with that, you know, that first kickoff panel, which is just helping people understand, you know, obviously the impacts of the pandemic and how it's changed their plans. You know, we are talking a lot about how people are reprioritizing different markets. I think one of the biggest trends we're hearing is, and you know, in some ways it just follows the pandemic, the path of the pandemic. You know, the Asia markets came back online earlier, and, you know, obviously China and Southeast Asia were places where people were putting a lot of time and effort. Tossi's going to actually talk about some of the stuff that they're doing in India, which is great because we don't get to, you know, have case studies on India quite as much as we'd like.
Big market, eh? Big market.
Yeah, yeah, crack, yeah. So right? There's a lot of, you know, a lot of complexity and things like that as well. So yeah, this just idea of how people are reprioritizing. I think right now, you know, much like we see the lockdown and the resurgence in Europe, you know, we're hearing a lot of people are pulling back from Europe for lots of different reasons. So LATAM, we'll have a session on LATAM where we're looking at cross-border opportunities there. That's something where we're seeing, you know, we've been seeing a lot of interest in Mexico, and, you know, we're not doing a Canadian session. I'm sorry to say, Michael, we appreciated you helping us out this past fall with the Oktoberfest one, but we will talk a little bit about, you know, how folks are overcoming operational friction. So we'll talk a little bit about some of the opportunities with the, as we call it, the USMCA, but I know you guys call it something different up
CUSMA.
North.
CUSMA.
Yes, the CUSMA, which always gets me hungry for some reason. But
well, I always think of the village people when you call it USMCA, so there.
All right, you got me. Yeah, now I'm going to have trouble getting that vision out of my head when we talk about it. But
that's what I think.
Yeah, I think, you know, this whole idea of how we're reprioritizing global e-commerce opportunities where we're starting, you know, we're pleased to have the folks from Flow join us for, they always do a great job on cross-border case studies. This time, they've got a cross-border case study with the founders of Made In. Chip Malt's going to be joining us, and they're going to discuss how their cross-border opportunities, or how they're taking advantage of cross-border opportunities by working with Flow. And, you know, we'll have Flow CEO Rob back with us again, who always does a great job of really just helping companies understand that, you know, there is a process and there are steps and there are challenges to overcome. So, you know, it's been great that those guys can support us. You know, another sponsor, Passport Shipping, you know, kind of a newer player in the cross-border space, but, you know, just got a really nice round of funding. And they've really kind of focused on these digital natives and direct-to-consumer brands that are, you know, really global first out of the gate. In many cases, they're kind of social and global out of the gate. So, you know, they'll help us understand a little bit of not only how they're helping folks, you know, kind of with their Canada expansion plans, but overcoming some of the chaos in you know, kind of UK, Brexit, EU, and I mean,
you mentioned chaos. I mean, I've been doing some work, and I mean, almost every node of the supply chain is just so challenging. From congestion to can't get containers to Brexit to I can't think of a better time where you really need a strong partner. Right? Help you figure this stuff out.
You're spot on about that. I mean, I think I just heard on CNBC that, you know, some industries, there's just no chips available. And, you know, without chips, you can't.
No containers,
you
know, kinda, no chips.
Yeah, you just can't go there. So, yeah, it's like, and in fact, we're wrapping up the day, you know, with a session we're called Reaccelerating Global E-Commerce. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're being, you know, kind of realistic with people. We're talking to some folks that actually joined us at LA last year, and they were talking about their, you know, ambitious international programs. And some of those programs got, you know, put on hold.
Yeah, they went sideways, right? Yeah, they went sideways, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And the reason they got put on hold again was largely because of supply chain constraints and things like that. So, you know, you can't, you know, really make a big push into the UK or into, you know, other, you know, kind of hot markets internationally if you can't deliver the goods. So, you know, they're very realistic, you know, constraints out there today, and they're not going away, you know, anytime soon. So, you know, the good news is, yes, e-commerce is booming, cross-border is, you know, right there in its wake, but, you know, there's challenges. So I think some of the growth that we're seeing is going to be hindered, to be honest, by just the lack of availability. Now, you know, some product categories are less impacted by that than others.
So if you had to kind of summarize your event coming up on March 25th, what are the kind of the three big things that folks would go there and would kind of expect to take away from the day?
Yeah, I mean, I think the big thing is, you know, the key takeaway is, it's okay if you've had to slow down some of your ambitious global e-commerce plans. You know, you got to take care of your neighbors first and foremost. You got to look out for your family first and foremost. And and that in many cases has meant, hey, you know, we got to focus on our domestic market. So, you know, we were talking on a prep session yesterday about how some of the global plans, you know, the resources got, you know, diverted to making sure that, you know, in-store pickup and ship from store and some of those type projects that have been on the to-do list, but, you know, have been just kind of moving along, you know, taking their own good time. Well, boom, you know, had to have that. So I think that's one, you know, this whole kind of reprioritizing and reaccelerating growth. What does that mean? In many cases, it's, you know, they're you know, HR issues as well. You know, how do you grow your team? You know, what do you do? What are the tough decisions that need to be made, especially when it comes to, you know, kind of the extended members of your team? We'll spend some time throughout the day talking about, you know, a topic that's been very popular at Guelph recently, which is this idea of the big marketplaces and the large, you know, global e-commerce platforms that are in some place just, you know, they're displacing traditional distributors and things like that. So I think this whole idea of how you get product to market internationally, you know, it used to be through international distributors and wholesale partners, and right. and that's changing. I mean, we had one guy talking about how, you know, the pandemic has just, you know, really impacted parts of Europe, which had fought really well or had basically, you know, fought the chains, the big global chains in, you know, in deference to mom and pops. But, you know, the mom and pops have been wiped out by the pandemic. So, you know, suddenly there's no mom and pops and there's no chain stores. And, you know, so there's so just
the brands brands are losing distribution, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Is what
the and risk then I think is. The last theme is just this idea of, you know, operations. You know, there's friction everywhere. We talked a little bit about the supply chain stuff, but, you know, there's still all sorts of, you know, friction when it comes to your regulatory and, you know, all sorts of payment issues and shipping issues and things like that. So just getting your operations in order from a cross-border perspective, you know, something we've talked at since the beginning of Guelph, but, you know, it's not going away.
Congratulations on bringing the community again, back together again, at least virtually, and always an insightful afternoon. So again, it's where would I go to register and learn more? It's the usual kind of spot, Guelph, globalecommerceleadersforum.com.
Yep, and then just look for the motorcycle, you know, rolling down the road, getting ready to head around the next corner and hit the attend button, and we'll get you registered. It's free for everyone to attend. We just really want to kind of keep the conversation going. And again, want to thank everybody in the community that's been helping us out, especially the speakers who, you know, are super busy and they've been able to take time out to kind of help us, and really appreciate that.
All right. Well, listen, continued success with Guelph Events. And of course, we'll be back here on the podcast, which gives us the ability to kind of do this chit and chat and in between thought leadership events, share a little thought leadership. We'll have lots of great guests coming on, coming up in the months, and we'll explore all these in depth. But until then, Kent, fantastic to spend a bit of time for you. And I look forward to seeing you on the virtual stage on March 25th.
Yes. Well, as always, thanks for your aid and assistance, and thanks for helping us get the word out.
Mark your calendars and join us for Guelph Accelerate, a global growth summit, Thursday, March 25th from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. ET, as the Guelph community dives into a series of engaging keynotes, actionable panel discussions, and fast-paced workshops and breakout. If you like this podcast, you can subscribe on Apple iTunes, Spotify, and now on Amazon Music Podcast Channel or your favorite podcast platform. Please rate and review with a 5-star rating, and be sure and recommend to a friend or colleague in the retail cross-border commerce industry. I'm Michael LeBlanc, founder and president of Emmy LeBlanc Company, Inc., and you can learn more about me on www.emmyleblanc.co and more about the Global E-Commerce Leaders Forum, and continue to keep up with the latest on cross-border commerce at www.globalecommerceleadersforum.com. Until next time, have a safe week.